always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this fine Thursday afternoon. Yeah, that's what we'll call it. I'd say it's fine. It's really nice where I am. By you guys. Today on the show, we're going to be talking about the NBA's approach to stopping tanking. Adam Silver said he had enough, and he has made it very clear by way of these rules that he has had enough. I have some questions about how all of this is going to work and some of the unintended consequences that are going to come about from this. Also have some questions about the timing. There is literally a playoff game tonight, game six of this great OKC San Antonio Spurs series has been going on. And I would imagine some time on their pregame show is going to be devoted to discussing and debating this these anti-tanking rules that Adam Silver has put into place. So that doesn't seem ideal. I also want to talk about what this says about Adam Silver and the focus and what he actually cares about in the league. So I guess we'll discuss that. And then look, this is a Lakers show. My role in covering the Lakers whenever anything happens is, all right, how can I relate this to the Lakers? This one's pretty easy. So we'll discuss, you know, what a world without tanking would mean for the Lakers as you know, they try to build around Luka. And then finally, before, you know, obviously the Q&A towards the end of the show, we'll also talk about Giannis and how the league might have just completely bleeped over the Milwaukee Bucks. So, yeah, honestly, for a random Thursday after the Lakers have already been eliminated from the NBA playoffs, this is kind of a packed show. So let's go ahead and dive on in. Here we go. A quick reminder, please hit that like button. Please hit that share button. Please hit that subscribe button, both to the show and to the pod, if that is how you're taking this in. Turn on notifications for the show. Turn on notifications for YouTube so you get the notifications for the show. And then today's show, as all of our shows here on YouTube, are brought to you in part by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA and make a $5 lineup of your own and then get $50 worth of free lineups on Prize Picks. Again, Prize Picks is where to do that. I've been having a lot of fun here might dip into that app again tonight as we get together to watch a fascinating game between the San Antonio Spurs and Oklahoma City Thunder. All right, so let's start though with the tanking rules and what some of them are, and I don't want to get too deep into the weeds here because, frankly, I just see that as an opportunity to bore a lot of you guys. so like I'm not gonna pull up the graphic. I'm not gonna get into the specifics here. It's called this 3-2-1 system, meaning I guess that there are like three tiers that teams can kind of sort of find themselves in. They're talking about, you know, teams can't pick in the top five in three consecutive seasons. You can't pick number one twice in a row. They didn't. According to Jake Fisher, they haven't figured out what's going to happen if teams do, you know, land in the top five three consecutive years. Like, what's going to happen to that top five pick in that third year? Or what would happen to the first overall pick the following year if the same team happens to win the lottery twice? You can't protect picks top 12 through 15 in trades. How they arrived at that number, I look forward to finding out one day. In the second round, the first 16 picks are in inverse order. So that means the team that picks last in the lottery will pick first in the second round. That's going to convolute a lot of the conversation around second round picks. Those might just not get traded anymore, because now all of a sudden, if you're at the back end of the lottery and you have a second rounder, that might be essentially a first round pick. Remember, we talked just like about this just yesterday, where a high second round pick is seen in some circles around the NBA as more valuable as a low first round pick, because the contractual obligations to a second rounder in the NBA are actually a lot lessened by quite a bit. And so now, if you're like a mid-tier NBA team and you're considering trading a second rounder, you better get a pretty damn good player for that second rounder. So that might further complicate trades. That's great, Adam. Let's see. These rules that are being put into place, this is kind of a testing window through the 2029 season. And then at the 2029 season, they will decide whether or not they're going to fully ratify these rules and make them permanent. And then finally, and probably most notably, honestly, all they needed to do, in my opinion, they granted Adam Silver the ability to reduce teams' lottery odds, modify teams' draft positions, and impose significant fines to teams that they think are tanking. And honestly, you could have just skipped all of that other stuff and just done that. But unfortunately, if you do that, that would require Adam Silver having a spine, which he does not. Honestly, a feat of physics that dude gets to stay vertical. The tanking rules themselves are very convoluted, very litigious, as you would expect them to be coming from the mind of Adam Silver. They seem to present a lot of pitfalls and loopholes and unintended consequences. Some that we can recognize now and some that we might recognize down the road. One potential pitfall here is, you know, if they expanded the lottery to include the first two teams that are eliminated from the play-in, right? So, you know, those two teams are now being included in the lottery, which means if you're one of those two teams, and probably more specifically, if you're the 10 seed in either conference, you're asking yourself, all right, do I want to win this game for the chance at winning another game to only have the opportunity to play against the top team in the conference and get slaughtered by that team? Most teams, honestly, presented with that scenario are going to say, eh. And then now that they're being included in the lottery, they're probably saying, wait, I could jump significantly. And like, that's the downside to losing this play-in game. Like, are we going to see teams tanking a play-in game? I guess in that circumstance, in that hypothetical, the league discipline aspect of this would come into account, where if Adam Silver thinks that a team is not trying its hardest in his play-in tournament, I would hope he would grow a spine and make that team forfeit the pick or pay millions of dollars in fines. But, you know, we'll see if Silver is ever willing to do that. So yeah, it's overall, I didn't understand, the timing of this. I didn't understand why this is a thing that like Adam Silver just desperately needs to get to. And by asking that question, why, you know, whether it's why now, why these rules, why this issue, we arrive at a lot of conclusions about Adam Silver that I've been at for a while, but I think are kind of, inarguable at this point. Adam Silver, when presented with something that he cares about, has in the past operated quickly, right? Got rid of Donald Sterling with the quickness. Remember when the Euro foul, right? Where, you know, in order to stop a fast break, guys would just reach out and foul somebody. And that was taking away transition opportunities, which are some of the most exciting plays in the sport. Adam Silver at that point, you know, that at that point they only had the clear path foul, but now they also have the take foul, as kind of a technical foul that referees can dole out. They're kind of inconsistent with those calls. I think sometimes they need to be reminded by the guys on the court or on the sideline that the take foul is an option there. Oftentimes they won't call it until somebody will be like, take foul, right? Take. You guys can at least talk about it. But like overall, Adam Silver saw that as a problem facing the watchability of the league and acted really relatively quickly and has, for the most part, gotten rid of a lot of those fouls, right? And now, you know, now that the tanking got so bad this year and teams spent so much of this last season tanking as they did, and did so so obviously, Adam Silver has said, you know what? Enough. We're getting rid of this shit, or I'm at least trying. And he gets all of this done with the quickness. And, you know, he was asked about flopping the other day, and he was on McAfee, and he, you know, gave some answer that, like, players have always been taught to accentuate calls, and that he has seen players falling, but so long as it isn't, you know, convincing referees consistently enough that there is a call, that he doesn't really see a problem with it. And his answer was frankly offensive. Like, his answer was that of a person who has never played basketball or watched basketball. If a player is falling so frequently as Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has, that you have Tom Haberstroh out there of Yahoo literally charting the amount of falls after shots that Shai has, then that would indicate that it's become pretty obvious, right? And for there to be enough players around the league that you could say, yeah, Shai is bad, but is he that much worse than so-and-so? And is that player that much worse than so-and-so? And, you know, so on and so forth. And like, for so much of the conversation about these playoffs to be about flopping and refereeing and all of that, you know, would indicate to me that fans are kind of sick of this. And, you know, I look, obviously out here in rural Texas, where I live about a half hour north of Austin, but I'm in the burbs, and here in rural Texas, people probably feel a certain way about NBA players. So there's kind of nothing that those guys could do to get in the good graces of some of my neighbors, whatever. But even still, like, when I ask, or you know, when I talk about the playoffs, or, you know, when somebody, you know, one of my neighbors brings up, yeah, man, like, what do you think of that game last night? What do you think about this Lakers matchup? What do you think about this? And then somebody else overhears us talking about the NBA playoffs. It's always some comments of like, yeah, I can't watch it, man. It's too many free throws. Or I can't watch it, man. It's so much flopping. If I want flopping, I'd watch soccer. And like, outside of the, granted, often very thinly veiled racism that I'll sometimes encounter out here, there are, I think, some like actual fair critiques of the basketball that we're watching. And I do think flopping is probably the league's biggest watchability issue. And I know that online, there's a lot of people who are saying, gosh, if you weren't focused so much on free throws and if we weren't talking so much about refereeing, we could just celebrate how great these players are. And it's like, okay, but ignoring a problem doesn't make the problem go away. And at a time where, you know, there is so much competition for eyes, fixing watchability should be a league's or a commissioner's biggest, should be his top priority. And it just isn't, right? Based on the way he hasn't acted, the way Adam Silver hasn't acted on flopping and stuff like that, compared to how he has acted on these other issues, Silver doesn't care about it. He himself has talked about how he doesn't think this is a problem. And I just flatly disagree. Now, I was kind of wondering, like, why wouldn't Silver care about this, given that it has dominated the online discourse about these playoffs to the extent that it has? A playoff, by the way, that have been phenomenal. Like, this series between the Thunder and the Spurs has been an all-timer. It's been excellent basketball. And yet, oftentimes, the focus, because anytime the game starts getting close, the referees take it upon themselves, especially in Oklahoma City, to grant Shea 13 free throws or whatever. Like, you know, given how much of this discourse about has been about refereeing and flopping and stuff like that, you would think Silver would care, but he clearly doesn't. I was wondering why, and I think the answer to that is actually pretty simple. Tanking risks, or teams losing on purpose, puts at risk the bottom line, right? You look at the arenas of some of those teams that started tanking way back in like January this year, and you look at their arenas by the end of the season, and they are libraries. They are mausoleums. Like, they are just, there's just, it's not the setting and it's not the visual that Silver wants. And those owners, you know, who have seen, like, the other part of this too, is that, like, when I talk to people about, like, the league, whether it be, you know, regular fans or whatever, but especially like casual fans, I'll ask, like, do you care about tanking? And they'll say, no. Like, honestly, depending on what fan base I am kind of talking to, or whatever team this hypothetical fan that I'm talking to, I love to do this at like Summer League, right? Where you have so many different fan bases all in Vegas at the one time. I like to just kind of talk to people as I walk around and ask, like, just get a general sense for the things that fans kind of care about. And I'll ask, like, do you care about tanking? Is that something that, like, you guys honestly, like, are worried about? And if it's like a Wizards fan or a Kings fan or some of these other teams that don't really have access to superstar talent any other way, those fan bases generally say, like, no, if anything, we welcome it. We root for our team to lose so that eventually maybe we can get a Wemby, or maybe we can get a, you know, a castle or whatever. Unfortunately for the Spurs, and unfortunately for the league, the Spurs got both those guys. But like, I just don't get the sense, like, I do think that, like, tanking and teams losing on purpose is a problem. I'm not saying it isn't. But if I compare the discourse about tanking to the discourse about flopping, it's not even close. It's not, like, far more people say, like, you know, roll their eyes when I watch basketball games with them because they see these 6'7", 6'8", chiseled Avenger guys falling at the lightest touch, you know, and it does make people say, oh, cool, it's a soft leg, great. They see these hand check calls and they see some of the physicality, you know, taken out of the sport, and they say, yeah, I'm all right. And you know, you compare that to the number of people who care about tanking. I just don't think people really care much about tanking. Owners would, though. Gambling partners would. TV partners would care about tanking because, you know, as teams lose more, fans check out for that period while that team is tanking with the hope of checking back in whenever they get whatever superstar they would hopefully draft. And that is why Adam Silver cares. Adam Silver, it's become abundantly clear with Adam Silver what he cares about in his time, or what he has cared about in his time as NBA commissioner. And it is revenue, driving revenue, increasing revenue by any and all steps that he can. You look at an NBA court now during a playoff game, and it looks like a NASCAR car. You look at the jerseys, right? Everybody has the patches on there that, you know, for like the Lakers have the BB Go patch on their jersey, right? A lot of these, he's trying to, you know, his partnership with Nike, right? I think Nike has essentially ruined NBA jerseys and really kind of hurt branding across the league. But what it's done is hopefully inject a little shot in the arm with all of the new jerseys that come out every year. It forced people to buy new jerseys. You know, you look at like the way that the league sidled up to gambling and just was absolutely thrilled to partner with those gambling sites and all of that stuff. And, you know, that's, you know, I know that I'm saying this with Prize Pick as a logo up there, but like at the end of the day, you know, it has, you know, altered the way that the sport is talked about. You look at, you know, any number of other efforts that Adam Silver has taken. The in-season tournament, at a time where the league just so desperately needs to cut back the number of games that teams are playing, Adam Silver has actually lengthened the season for some teams. And it's just like, and now he's talking about televising the lottery. He has expanded the draft to 2 days to collect some additional television revenue. Like, in any way, shape, or form, if there is any decision that Adam Silver can make that might add a dollar to the bottom line, he operates with the quickness. And here, in this case, with tanking, as it might put at risk some of those dollars on the bottom line, he operated with the quickness. Flopping, whether or not that impacts the bottom line, is kind of debatable. I think it does, because watchability is a big factor in the entertainment industry, but Adam Silver doesn't seem to think that it's that big of a deal, and he hasn't acted upon it yet. If he gets some kind of intel or information or research done that shows that flopping impacts the bottom line by X or Y dollars, then maybe, just maybe, he would finally act on that issue. But to me, the anti-tanking measures that have been taken here and that we've been talking about over the course of the show, they are just what they are. I know people are kind of hyperventilating over them. I don't really get why. I don't really understand the outsized reaction from online communities to these tanking measures. But like, The measures themselves and the specific things that the league is trying to do to curtail tanking, that's just sitting over there. To me, the much bigger story here is that this is very clearly what Adam Silver cares about. And once again, what Adam Silver cares about a lot more is business stuff. And he just doesn't seem to understand that what he needs to be focused on is basketball stuff, watchability stuff, like making the game presentable. That's what matters here. And until Adam Silver gets it, which we are far enough into the game here with Adam Silver that you know, I think we could probably comfortably say he's not going to get it. But until he gets that, I think he's going to continue to be a failure as a commissioner. All right, let's talk about how this impacts the Lakers. So first and foremost, tanking, as Rob Pelinka has kind of said, tanking isn't necessarily an avenue that the Lakers feel comfortable heading down. I would point out to Rob Pelinka that the Lakers got Anthony Davis by way of years of tanking and building up that young core and then turning that young core into Anthony Davis. But same time, Rob, you know, got his job because Genie fired Jim Buss after those years of tanking. And she said that that was putting the Lakers brand at risk. So like saying that the Lakers can't tank is kind of sort of what Rob has to say. Now, if that is the case, if that is the assumption that, or that is, the modus operandi of the Lakers, while Rob is kind of calling the shots here, removing tanking from the toolbox, you know, for other teams, who might not have the advantages that like the Lakers have, that helps the Lakers. I think these anti-tanking measures, they kind of sort of help the Lakers. Like there's reports coming out. Like Jake Fisher said that a GM told him that he isn't looking to trade a first round pick beyond 2029. Well, if that GM happens to be the GM of a team that is in on Giannis, and that 2029 pick or the picks 2029 and later would be put on the table for Giannis, and now those are being taken off the table for Giannis, that helps the Lakers. We'll talk about Giannis here in a second. The other thing, too, you know, that needs to be pointed out is if tanking is I don't think it'll ever become a thing of the past. I think teams are always going to do whatever they possibly can to give themselves whatever advantage they can. And they're going to skirt this line and they're going to toe this line and they're going to step over the line wherever they can. While, you know, if the prospect is good enough, teams are going to risk it for that prospect. But you know, if tanking is kind of done away with, and if teams become more reluctant to trade picks, then the teams who are willing to trade picks probably are going to get a better bang for their buck, for trading those picks. So it might take fewer assets to go out and create a better roster in the immediate fallout from these policies. So I think that kind of helps the Lakers, seeing as like if I was a team, like if I was like the Chicago Bulls, or if I was the Kings or the Bucks, again, who we'll talk about here in a second. But if I were some of these teams that are either in the early stages of or embarking into a full-blown rebuild that features years of tanking and drafting high and assembling a young core, if I am one of those teams and the league, you know, implements these policies right now, I would be pissed. I'd be like, well, like Chicago, right? They finally embraced, you know, a tear down rebuild, and their reward for it is, you know, the league just made it more difficult to build that way. Now the front office that did a lot of that tearing down, they got fired anyway. So that might tell me that Jerry Reinsdorf was kind of sort of like not interested in that kind of a rebuild anyway. But like if I'm one of those teams that is getting ready for that kind of a rebuild, these rules would piss me off quite a bit. Lakers are not there though, right? And they're talking about this being this 3-year trial window. Well, that doesn't really affect the Lakers. This 3-year window doesn't really affect the Lakers because while that 3-year window is going on, the Lakers are going to be in the 3-year prime, hopefully longer. But like Luka's going to be at the peak of his powers while all this is going on. So like if they get more bang for their buck, you know, with the picks that they're using, while other teams are reluctant to trade those picks because they're waiting to see the fallout short and long term from these anti-tanking policies, then the Lakers stand to benefit greatly. So I think today, you know, if you're a highly cynical, bordering on Machiavellian Laker fan, today's a really good day for you, right? And by the way, that's kind of how I am. So like when I saw all of this come out, you know, I had my questions about like, why are we doing this now? Why are you releasing this and leaking this the day of game 6 between OKC and San Antonio? Couldn't this have waited a few days even from now so that like the Lakers or so that the conference finals can be fully taken up and like over the course of the couple of days while there is no basketball, maybe that becomes the time that everybody can debate these anti-tanking policies. Those were my questions on it. But like for me being very Machiavellian, very selfish, oldest kid, only kid for like 7 years or so, like I do find myself saying like, go on, right? Like go on. And I think most Lakers fans should be happy about these anti-tanking measures. Also, like if you remove tanking from the toolbox of a lot of these smaller markets, that greatly complicates the extent to which they can compete with the Lakers. And typically, like that's what surprised me, honestly, the most about these anti-tanking policies. It's like for the most part, usually the NBA has almost erred too heavily on the side of making life that much easier on the little guy. But if you take away tanking from OKC, from San Antonio, from Utah, from, you know, a lot of these smaller markets, you make it and you basically tell them, nope, you got to compete for talent against the Lakers, against the Knicks, against the Bulls, against, you know, the Celtics and against these either larger markets or bigger brands without the ability to just be really bad for a few years and assemble a young core. Then I don't know what those teams are going to be doing, you know, moving forward as they build out their talent pools. But for the Lakers, you basically just told them that, yeah, your picks are going to go further. Like your dollar is going to go further in this pick economy. By the way, like the Lakers, I don't think they're going to be a, lottery team anytime soon while they have Luka Doncic. But like one thing that might happen towards the end of Luka's prime, right, is that like, kind of like we've seen with the Lakers before Luka got there, they had kind of been trending in that direction of like a couple play-in games and then, you know, maybe missing the play-in altogether or whatever. And if you're like a play-in team, right, 9 or 10 seed or a high lottery team, like that's apparently where the league wants everybody to reside. And if like this might actually help extend Luka's prime, you know, in that like the Lakers, if they become kind of a mid-tier team and their second rounders become as valuable as we talked about earlier in the show, then that might make it that much easier to build around an older Luka. So that's something also to keep in mind if these rules are ratified into permanent implementation moving forward. So for the sake of the Lakers, today was a good day, even though I don't really necessarily agree with Adam Silver caring about this at all. Let's talk about Giannis. So as far as, again, you know, if let's just say now, look, Miami is one of the teams that's in on Giannis. I don't believe the Knicks are as in on Giannis. We'll see how the finals go for them. But I believe they've probably done enough by getting to the finals to let James Dolan know that they want to stick together and continue to build through continuity. Maybe some, you know, peripheral improvements and stuff like that to give themselves a better, give that core a better shot, but not like the full fledged, all right, trade three wings for Giannis path that they might have embarked on had they lost in the first round or something like that. So New York is kind of sort of off the table. Boston, I guess, is a potential landing spot for Giannis there. I saw Matt Moore posted the odds for next year's champion, and Boston was like really high up on that list. And that really kind of surprised me. I wondered if they were taking a Giannis trade into account there. If it's Boston and they are wondering whether or not they should trade a longer term pick as part of a package for Giannis, and now are convinced that they shouldn't do that by way of these tanking policies or these anti-tanking rules. And that brings the market back to, you know, where the Lakers can operate in. That's a good day for the Lakers. And, you know, for the Lakers also, you know, all they've had, you know, their offer is pretty straightforward, as is like Miami's, right? But the Lakers offer is pretty straightforward. And I know, like, I always, every time I bring up Giannis for the Lakers, I get like five or six comments in here, you know, telling me that I am somehow unaware of how unlikely it might be that the Bucks would trade Giannis just for cap space. I know. Trust me. I know. But like in this case, though, if the Lakers offer is basically here, here's three first round picks, right? The one that we would use on draft night, and then two future firsts. Here is a bunch of cap room or at least cap flexibility. Here's a big trade exception that you could turn into more picks if you want to turn that into more picks. But like, there's our offer. Like, it's pretty straightforward. If these anti-tanking rules make it that much trickier for all of these other teams to get involved in those trade negotiations, now all of a sudden the Lakers trade package becomes to look that much more appealing. And for somebody like me who thinks that the Lakers' best chance at catching OKC or San Antonio is to go all in for an Anthony or for a Giannis type, again, not the worst news. So it's going to be interesting. I really think that the league completely screwed over the Bucks, because what they need to do after they trade Giannis is bottom out, get into the lottery as frequently as they can, get as high in that lottery as they can, as frequently as they can, and rebuild by way of youth and all of that good stuff. But if the league now decides, nope, that is not a path we are comfortable with for teams anymore, what does Milwaukee do? Does Milwaukee trade Giannis? Like, honestly, he's been so wishy-washy about, you know, wanting to explicitly demand a trade or ask for a trade, that if you're Milwaukee, do you basically require him to say, trade me, in order to eventually trade him? Because there is no tear down rebuild waiting for you at the other side of this rainbow. That's might be how I would look at it. If you're Milwaukee, you know, are you interested in offers from teams that I guess like maybe the path is to take like Miami's offer, right? Where they're offering Tyler Hero and Jaquez and Khalil Ware and like three mid-tiered picks, and like, is that Does that make that trade package more intriguing? Because it basically forces you into the middle, and the middle is, you know, not a bad place to be in this lottery. As I'm saying all of this out loud, Adam Silver, like if we're talking about like reading Adam Silver's mind and by way of his decisions, he has been basically like with the multi-apron CBA, and now with making tanking that much more difficult, where Adam Silver is trying to get everybody is to 500. He wants everybody to be, that's it. Yeah. He wants everybody to be mediocre, because if you're, yeah, like if you're taking tanking away, that makes it that much more difficult to get like the rosters that OKC or San Antonio have. And then if you make it impossible to spend enough to employ a super team, you're putting a ceiling on the league. So you're forcing everybody into the middle. That's what they're doing. Huh. All right. Well, great. But anyway, yeah, like if you're Milwaukee, do you just take the deal that gets you to the middle that much faster? And then you just play the odds game while you take in mid-tier revenue. Maybe, I don't know. The Lakers package would basically, like, incentive to taking the Lakers offer is this tear down rebuild. And maybe this makes it less likely that the Lakers get Giannis. Look, the ripple effect of this is going to be really difficult to figure out. I'm going to have to sit on this one and talk to some people too. But yeah, as I've just kind of been talking this out over the course of the pod, the point of all of this is to get everybody to the middle. And that's annoying. Let's jump in the chat. Yeah, I'm really annoyed at myself for it taking me so long to figure out that like all Adam Silver has been operating towards is like driving up revenue for a mediocre league. That's what it is. Huh. Stupid me. All right, let's dive into some of your guys' questions and comments. Chris Ma 94. Silver let the Spurs create a dynasty, then banned everyone else from following the same process. I've seen this take a lot of places, and I don't even necessarily disagree with it, but like the line did need to be drawn somewhere. The tanking was really bad this year. And now we could say that it was really bad this year because it's a historically great draft next year. Although like this historically great draft doesn't have any prospects on the level of like LeBron or Wemby. It's just like a lot of really good players who are out there. But like the tanking got really bad, and it's gotten really bad over the years where like Utah is intentionally benching good players towards the end of their game to lose games on purpose. I don't see the difference between that approach and the stuff that got guys thrown out of the league for throwing games for, you know, like I don't see the difference there. And so like the tanking had gotten really bad in the league, and Adam Silver decided, all right, you guys forced our hand. We are drawing the line. And now, unfortunately, that now means that that is not a pathway that everybody else can take or anyone else can take from here on out, or at least for the next 3 years. But yeah, like, you know, I do empathize with Silver in the regard that something needed to be done. I don't think that it would be my top priority right now in the ways that it clearly is with Silver now. And I would be annoyed if I were a small market team that now has to compete with this freaking juggernaut of a young core that the Spurs put together. Largely with the help of the league rigging their lotteries so many times over the years. But like, yeah, it's like I saw Utah fans like getting angry at the fact that they were fined last year for not playing players. And it's like, you know, how dare you set the precedent with us? And it's like the precedent needed to be set somewhere. And you guys were doing it obviously enough that like people caught on and you guys got fined. And I think here with the Spurs, everybody else got so bad and so blatant with this stuff that the league finally stepped in and said, all right, we're not doing any more of this. This is no longer, or we're going to try to make it that much harder for you to do that. And again, like I think at the end of the day, the intended consequence, now there are going to be unintended consequence, but the intended consequence is that everybody has roughly similar levels of talent in this, you know, flattened world that will oscillate a little bit. You'll have teams that are bad over here and you'll have teams that are good up here, and it'll be very amoebic, and teams, I think, like rebuilds are going to take a lot less time in this you know, in this in the CBA world, in, you know, in the apron world, and in a world without tanking, I think like you won't see situations like the Wizards where they have just been so bad for so long. The NBA wanted to do away with that, and basically the way that they're doing away with it is trying to shorten that gap of like how far a rebuild needs to go before a team becomes watchable or competitive. And, you know, getting rid of tanking and putting basically a hard cap on the league, that forces everybody into this grouping in here. And now what that, where I will say, like, as a fan of the Dodgers who is hoping that the Lakers can operate at the same level organizationally, if everybody is kind of forced into this box here, that forces the Dodgers to, you know, that the Dodgers leadership to operate in a completely different world and a far more competitive world. But it also, like, if they do get good enough at some of the margins or whatever, maybe, just maybe, the Lakers, you know, they might be able to stay relevant for longer stretches of time than they have since Dr. Buss died. But yeah, I get the point here, Chris. I just think that the league needed to you know, draw the line somewhere, and it happened to be after the Spurs built a really effing good team. My counter also on top of that, Chris, like really quickly, if I could go back to that comment or whatever, is that like with how punitive these cap rules are, it's going to be really difficult for the Spurs to keep that young core together for very long. And, like, I don't think we're heading towards a dynastic run from the Spurs here. I think you're probably looking at, you know, a really good window here for the next couple to few years. And then that team's going to get really expensive. And, you know, maybe another lottery will be rigged for them to keep them afloat. But I think you're probably looking at, like, even Oklahoma City, right? Like, everybody was saying how, oh God, like, this team is this juggernaut. They're going to be this good for the next decade or whatever. And then the Spurs pop up and it's like, wait, are the Spurs the dynasty? And if you're asking, like, it's the age old cliche, if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one. If you have two dynasties, that means you don't have one. And so I think that's what we're looking at here in the West. And I think, you know, everybody becoming a lot more mediocre and matchups mattering a lot more. That's the league that we're heading towards. Let's see. The, what? I am not answering that one. Yeah, user KM4WK, Adam Silver's comments on the Pat Mac show shows he's not going to do shit about flopping. I would agree. He followed this up, or this user followed it up. Pat should have told him, I thought there was a rule in 2021 that the league was going to fine them when flops happen. That rule, like, never went away. It's technically still there, but it's never used, because that would involve getting in the NBPA's face, and Adam doesn't really want to do that. But yeah, like, I'm hoping that, like, we don't have too long of Silver, and I'm hoping whoever his successor might be understands kind of the revenue that the league is leaving on the table by way of being a little less watchable because of all the flopping. But, you know, until we get to that time, it's become abundantly clear that, like, Adam just doesn't care. Let's see. excuse me. Sorry. John Ledesma, a longtime supporter of the show. Thanks, Johnny. Talk about Giannis Antetokounmpo injuries and how he never seems to be healthy in the postseason. That's a big red flag if the Lakers are going to mortgage their entire future for him. Well, for one thing, like, if tanking, these anti-tanking measures are going to be that stringent, then you're not really, gambling that great of a future. Now, the injuries are a real concern, and heading into a season with a core of basically Giannis, who hasn't been able to get through a postseason healthy in a while, Luka, who has either been compromised or outright missed two straight postseasons, and Austin, who clearly broke down under the burden of high usage rates over the course of the season. Like, if that is your core, then I'm nervous. But I guess my retort would be, I don't know of very many cores that aren't particularly injury prone, like Jalen Williams in OKC. Like, are you, like, they aren't always going to be this deep, I don't think. And if he misses, like, another postseason with all of the things that he's had going on, like, what does that team look like? Even the Spurs, right? Like, the Spurs have to be hyper cautious with Wemby, with his minutes allotment and with how hard they let him play and how frequently they let him play in the regular season, that, like, he's always, I think, going to be an injury concern. Like, look at Denver, right? They haven't had Aaron Gordon the last couple of postseasons, and that has ended. Like, injuries, I just don't think it's not that I'm here saying that, like, you shouldn't take injuries into account at all, but if the Lakers can get Giannis basically for cap space and a few picks, then that value is just so incredible that I'm just like, all right, go for it. Like, it's funny, I'm putting together one of those golf sim bays in my garage. And I was looking at the Skytrack models, and without getting into the weeds, there's, like, the OG basic Skytrack model. There is the Skytrack Plus, and then there's this new one that they just released, which is, like, the Skytrack ST Max, I think is what it's called. And the difference between the Plus and the ST Max is, like, negligible. And it is, and the ST Max is like $1,300 more than the Plus, which is like $1,300 more than the OG. And so I, being cheap, went out and originally bought, it was on sale, I bought the original Skytrack model for, like, I think it was $599.99. And I'm just about ready to start, like, actually building the thing. Like, I had to build the shed, and I had to, like, build some shelves in the garage to get stuff off of the ground to clear the space to be able to build this thing. I'm finally ready to do it. And then I'm on Marketplace the other day, and I saw the Plus for $850. It's like the Plus and a few accessories very importantly, this, like, metal casing that you have in case you shank it and you hit the machine. And at that point, like with it being, you know, because after tax, the original one that I have, which is quite a bit worse than the plus model, like that is, you know, with the original being like 700 and the plus that I'm getting from Marketplace, there's like $100 difference there. It's like, all right, I have to. And that's kind of how I'm looking at Giannis. It's like, all right, if you're telling me that, like, you know, the cap space that the Lakers have can maybe get me like Walker Kessler and a couple other like solid rotation players, but for like basically the same cap space, I could go out and get Giannis. Yeah, sign me up. You know, and you know, it's still more expensive, just like the plus model was for those Skytrax things. But like, I'm still looking at this like, wait, so you're telling me for just like a few picks and like no current NBA talent, basically, that I can get Giannis Antetokounmpo? Like, that gamble to me is just such a clear value opportunity. And now look, like, as happens in gambling, sometimes you go all in and you lose, right? And in this case, you go all in and Giannis winds up hurt and you walk away from it saying like, shit, why did I do that? But then like afterward, at least then, like we see that the Lakers went for it, you know, and you know, it's like I told Pete the other day, like I still remember days from or stories from, you know, playing blackjack where I got dealt three straight aces and split and doubled all of them and had just a stupid amount of money on the table. And I still remember like the table's reaction on each of those hands that were thrown down by the dealer. And like that was a lot more fun than had I just been like, just hit me on the two aces. Like, that's essentially what the Lakers are walking into here. And I, you know, maybe to my own detriment sometimes, I'm a gambler. All right. Let's see. I think this is fair, Wesley. This is actually a pretty good retort to my issues with flopping. Officials never want to admit fault. Flopping calls were never going to be adhered to. I think there's something to it, though. We have seen officials overturn their calls if it's become obvious enough. But I think even here, though, if I was an official and I saw some guy like really trying to take advantage of me, you know, by just falling down and trying to fool me, I would actually take offense to it. I was hoping that this would eventually be one of the ways that the league could kind of police itself. Like I saw the other day, I'm not supporting this decision from Wemby, but Wemby, like as he was walking off of the court, right? You guys saw that clip of Wemby, you know, kind of leaning over to Bismack Biyombo and to Mason Plumlee as they were walking onto the court. He whispers something, and then immediately both those guys hit Jared McCain pretty hard. I'm not saying goonery is advised or whatever, but that's one of the ways that a sport kind of polices itself. Is like, all right, here, ref, ready? That's a foul, you know? Like, that happened all the time in the basketball that I grew up watching. You know, like Bill Simmons wrote about that.
Do I have my book of basketball?
Nope. I don't think I do. But Bill Simmons tells a story of Dave Cowens where he picked up five fouls that he considered were kind of tic-tac. And then on the sixth one, he intentionally just lays out somebody. And as he's walking off of the court, he tells the referee, see, that's a foul. You know, and I think if I were playing against OKC and I employed somebody like Bismack Biyombo and Shea spent so much time falling and twerking for fouls, eventually I'd be like, ready? You ready? Or especially against like Lu Dort, right? Who does so much dirty stuff. Like eventually the league kind of polices itself. And like I was hoping that the officials at some point would start to police flopping by way of like we see this sometimes with Luka, where if he starts getting a little too grifty, the referee will like call the foul, but they won't call it a shooting foul. And like, I'm all right. If you're going to do that with Luka, and if that's how you're going to police flopping and grifting, okay, like fine. I actually don't hate it, but you got to treat every player that way. You got to treat every grift that way. You got to treat every team that way as officials treat the Lakers. And I just don't think we've seen it play out that way. It's been kind of a bummer. All right. I am going to go ahead and jump out here. It has been an hour and I have to cook dinner for the fam. Thank you everybody for tuning in. Please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Please turn on notifications both for the show and for YouTube so you get the notifications for the show. Today's show is brought to you in part by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA and make a $5 lineup and you'll get $50 worth of lineups from Prize Picks. And then, make sure you guys are subscribed to the show in podcast form. Still debating an episode tomorrow. I have some stuff that I got to do around the house in preparation for a really busy week here coming up. So if I see you tomorrow, I'll see you tomorrow. If not, have a great rest of your weekend. Make somebody else's. And I will talk to you on Sunday. Have a good one, everybody.